T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Hour here on Cody and Gold. We're a half hour away from a Chiefs red half hour. Of course, the big news of the day, the Chiefs going to franchise tag Chris Jones, work toward a long-term deal. At least that's the hope, I think, for most here in Kansas City, and, well, for both sides, quite honestly. The perfect scenario, we went through our best-case scenarios of the offseason. We all said, sign Chris Jones to a long-term deal. I don't think any of us really, you wouldn't be against it entirely, but I don't want him playing on a franchise tag either. To me, it's you sign him long term or you trade him. I don't like the idea. We went through, you know, there are instances where guys play all the way through on a franchise tag. So it's not impossible that we're talking about week one of the season.
Of the time.
It's happened. Eric Berry did it. Now the dollar amounts, I'm sure, are a little bit different from what he was playing. So you have to factor that in as well if you feel like it's not going to be able to work on a long term deal. But now it's before the draft, I would say, would be kind of that next period, the first of the league year, March 18th, and the draft at the end of April, and then July 15th is the deadline to work out a long-term deal if you place somebody on the franchise tag. So that's where things are at on Chris Jones. We're going to get into that some more again during the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Also, the latest again on what's going on out at the Combine, our own Combine that we had, plus what Andy Reid had to say to Sirius XM yesterday about the reason they got to that Super Bowl level. It may seem obvious to some of you, but you'll want to hear what Andy Reid had to say about that. But of course, spring training going on. We heard from Whit Merrifield. He joined us live in the 10 o'clock hour just about his progression, his expectations for this 2020 season. We now, though, go out to the 610 hotline and welcome in J.J. Pacullo. He's the Royals Vice President, Assistant General Manager of Player Personnel. And J.J., back in Arizona, how's it feel to be there and just start out with spring training here so far?
Well, it's always an exciting time of year. I mean, it's fun to get down here, see the players for the first time in a while, watch them move around, see how their bodies have changed over the winter, how they've changed. And there's always optimism. You know, people are excited to be here early, a lot of positivity. So it's a fun time of year. You know, you like to bottle it up, and when you hit those lulls in the season, sprinkle a little bit of early spring training on people and, you know, pick people up. So it's a good time.
We obviously have a lot of questions about the system, JJ, but you mentioned bodies changing. You've obviously kept a close eye on Nicky Lopez his entire career in Kansas City. How different does he look to you?
Well, he looks stronger. I mean, there's no doubt he looks stronger. I mean, he spent pretty much the entire offseason in Arizona training with our strength staff, in particular John Wagle, our director of performance and development. And it's paid off. I think it's very obvious to people. He looks a little bit more physical. Of course, you know, Nicky being a middle infielder, he needs to get stronger, but maintain his flexibility and his mobility, his agility and lateral movement. So it's a different, you know, you got to walk that fine line of getting stronger. But Nicky's always had a good sense of who he is and what his role is. So, you know, that when a player is mature like that, you don't have to get overly concerned. But he's put himself in a position, I think, to start the year stronger. Like most guys, as the year goes on, they lose a little bit. But, where he'll end this year will be in a better spot than where he ended last year. And having gone through it that extra month of September last year for the first time, he'll be more prepared to do it in 2020 as well.
Before we get to some of the pitchers, because, JJ, that's obviously who everyone asks us about, which means eventually we're going to ask you about. Last spring training, we were down there, and we were talking a little bit about Khalil Lee and his development. And one thing you and I had the conversation about, how you were hoping he would start swinging earlier in counts to take advantage of better pitches because you felt like the plate discipline wasn't an issue and you just wanted him to be more aggressive as a hitter. where has he come around as a hitter? Because at the level he's still at, he's still so young, JJ. Just where is he now in the development as a hitter, and how close do you think he's getting to being, you know, big league ready in that department?
Yeah, we all think a telltale sign of a good hitter is when they jump from one level to the next, you expect a little bit of a regression, and then they catch up to the league. But in Khalil's case, you know, he did get promoted to AA in 2018, but he got injured in August and missed the month of August. So really, 2020 was his first true go-around in AA. But if you look at his numbers in Wilmington the previous year to AA in 2019, there was no regression. You know, his power numbers were the same, and his stolen bases really took a big jump. The only difference was he hit a few more ground balls. And, you know, for a guy that profiles in the middle of the lineup somewhere, you know, you don't want him hitting as many ground balls. So Alex Umwalt, our director of hitting performance, Drew Saylor, our hitting coordinator, Keone Duran, our assistant hitting coordinator, you know, got to him in the fall. Khalil's always in Arizona. I mean, he trains here year-round. Got to him. They were able to show him his data. They were able to show him some of his swings and his contact points. And Khalil's coachable. So, you know, he did get a little bit more aggressive last year. So to the point that we don't have as many concerns with that. And now it's a matter of, okay, how do I drive balls more consistently? Because he's got a very high ceiling. And so far in spring training, his BPs have been excellent. Of course, he's close to a major league hitter right now. The professional hitters, their batting practices tend to look very good. But what does he do when he gets in the batter's box? And through our first, you know, four or five games here, he's taken what he's done in his work into the games, and he's driven some balls really well. Just missed hitting a game-winning homer our opening day, first pitch in the ninth inning, and he flew out against the track. So he's doing it. So that's a great sign. It's a great sign of maturity. And the way Khalil works, you can't help but to be optimistic about what he'll do down the road. He's got a chance to be a special player.
J.J. Pecola joining us here on 610 Sports Radio. When you're talking about Khalil there, you mentioned just his change in his approach at the plate and the way they're hitting. As an organization, how have you guys maybe altered the approach within it in terms of hitting and development?
I know a lot's been written about how we restructured things. And really what we were trying to do was just match up all of our different departments between our analytic departments, our performance department, our behavioral science department, and all the information that we have. How do we collaboratively work together to try to help players? You know, our hitting coaches, I would say they are subject matter experts. You know, they understand swings. But when it comes to body movements and understanding analytics and how it ties into the swing and physically what guys can or can't do, some guys just have limitations in the way their body moves. Well, how do we make that body work to its maximum ability? And, you know, that collaborative effort between the departments I mentioned is really the major change. I mean, the swing is the swing. I know a lot's been made of, you know, launch angle, but there's a lot of misunderstanding of what launch angle is. And, you know, without getting into all of that, we're trying to get our coaches to understand, don't be intimidated by the term launch angle, and get our players to understand, what does that really mean? It's ball off the bat. It's the ball's angle off the bat. Well, how do we create a maximum launch angle? And for a guy like Nicky Lopez compared to Khalil Lee, you're looking for different launch angles. You know, they're different types of players. So with the people we have in place now, we're just working more collaboratively and communicating very well with the player, and that's really the major change. But the swing is the swing, and I like to refer to Ted Williams. If you read, you know, his book on hitting, it fits today's game. So, you know, the swing hasn't changed that much. Now, the way you may go about teaching it, some of the drill work may look a little bit different, but it's really the understanding and the communication from coach to player that's the big difference in today's game.
JJ, obviously, as the director of player personnel, you get a firsthand look at a lot of these pitchers that we've been talking about for a few years here now in Kansas City. How, you know, with Brady Singer or Bubich or Kowar or Lynch, or, you know, you probably want me to mention Bolin and Austin Cox and those guys too. But at the top right now, we got a chance to see four of those guys in a game yesterday, including Brady Singer, work against the heat of the Cubs lineup. Where is he right now? I think people in Kansas City are asking, hey, you know, how long till the reinforcements arrive? But you know, how far along is Brady Singer in his development as far as being ready for you guys?
Yeah, Brady's handling himself. All of the guys you just mentioned that are major league camp, they're handling themselves in camp very, very well. They're very mature. We knew that from the time we signed them. So we're not, you know, those of us who've been around them are not surprised at how they're handling things. But Brady's a competitor, you know. So yesterday, he was clean first inning, second inning. You know, I was not at that game, but there were, you know, three, from what I understand, soft hits. So now he's at bases loaded, no out jam. You know, the competitor in Brady comes out. He knows he needs to punch somebody out to get out of this inning unscathed. He punches out two, and he gets a weak ground ball, and he gets out of it. And I think that just is a very clear indication of how mature Brady is. A lot of young pitchers in that situation are going to panic. Brady didn't panic. And, you know, the good thing about that game, he got experience with guys on base. And it tells our coaching staff, how ready is he or how close is he? It gives us a better picture. Same thing with Lynch and Kowar. They had to pitch out of traffic yesterday, and they got out unscathed. And that's a great sign. So even though you love to see the 1-2-3 innings, strike out 2 out of 3, we learn as much about a pitcher when they are in difficult situations, and it gives us a better indication of how ready they are. I know people will want to ask, you know, what's the estimated time of arrival? You know, we're not, the way I like to describe it, you know, we're not building a building where you're starting on this date, and by this date, you got a completion date. You know, there's going to be bumps in the road. There are things that you need to do as a pitcher that the major league coaches and other mature veteran players will pick apart. So if you don't hold runners well, you'll get exposed in the major leagues. You don't field your position well, you'll get exposed in the major leagues. So when you get to the major leagues, you have to win. In the minor leagues, we're about development. We want to win, but we're about development. So our part, if those guys are not on our major league team, okay, what do we need to address? So when they do get to the major leagues, they have no weaknesses. You know, in an ideal world. So when that timetable, predicting when they would get to the big leagues is a difficult thing. As we see them play against older players who will try to expose their weaknesses, we'll have a better idea of how close they are. But so far, so good. They've all done very well. Bubic hasn't pitched in an actual game yet. He threw 2 innings in a B game against the Rangers. He gave up a solo home run, but he punched out 5. He'll get his chance, I believe, today to get in a game. So we'll see him against major league hitters with people in the seats for the first time today.
How do you feel where this organization is at in the minors compared to maybe where it was 8 to 10 years ago, for example? Just where you guys are set up for the future?
You know, it's there's a lot of similarities, and I assume you're talking about when that first group of guys
sure.
came through,
yeah.
2010-11. We were probably a little bit more heavy on the hitter side, the position player side. You know, we had higher ceiling guys on in the field. I think it's a little bit flipped, but similar in our depth. Our pitching is very strong in AA and AAA, and even in Wilmington and Lexington. We feel, very, very good about our depth. One of our goals from 2006 was to be a pitching factory, and we wanted to have a legitimate prospect in our rotation 1 through 5. This is the first year that we've been here that we feel like we can say that. We have that type of depth. So I think what, you know, our fans are excited about is you see guys in AA and AAA, you know they're not that far away. So we feel great about our depth and in particular pitching. And I think we have some position players that are primed for bounce-back years. We have total confidence in the Prados and the Melendezes and the Matiases. And, you know, we feel great about them. They just had a little, bump in the road last year that they're going to work through. And that's the beauty of the minor leagues as well. You know, you don't have to rush guys through. You know, if they meet the challenge at a level, there's another level for a challenge. They meet that challenge, there's another level. So you just keep moving them. So we feel very good. It's an exciting time, and I feel like our coaches are sort of invigorated. They understand the talent we have, and they're just doing a phenomenal job in bringing what they have to offer every day to the field, and our guys are getting better, and that's ultimately what we want.
Do you already know who you're taking in the draft?
I have no idea. No idea. I know it's early in the scouting season. Lonnie Goldberg and his staff, they're they're hitting the pavement pretty hard right now, and it's picked up quite a bit with the Division I season starting and high schools in Florida. So they're running around like crazy, and you know they'll do a great job, and we'll take the right guy in June.
JJ, we'll let you get back to that. I know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much for giving us some time today here on 610.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That's JJ Pocola, Royals Vice President, Assistant General Manager of Player Personnel. Cody, getting a draft question, sneaking in a draft question at the end.
I just kind of want to know who they're going to take. I know they have a short list. I know they already have this thing narrowed. Okay? So you can't be telling me that they don't have some idea. I know he wasn't going to give me an answer. That was part of the reason of asking it. But come on, give me like a short list. Because right now, I think the name I most recently saw mocked to them was Spencer Torkelson.
Yeah, it means absolutely nothing.
The first baseman from Arizona State.
Means absolutely nothing to me and most people. I have no idea who that guy is.
No one knows who Spencer Torkelson is?
Zero clue.
So we're not going to do the next 10 minutes of the show on Spencer Torkelson. Okay.
Please not do that. No,
you'll find out eventually as baseball season goes on. I can geek out a little bit on baseball.
Just
like,
a bit?
Really all sports, but baseball's just that one that I grew up on so much to the point that I just kind of got locked in on. Like, I still kind of like the, okay, who are they going to draft? Who's this? What's it going to be? In the NFL draft, I'm cycling through that, too. I just, I'm not, like, on Binkley. Binkley was on some site yesterday. Legitimately, like, he was thrilled to tell four consecutive people about how he told me, and then he told you, and then he told Serta, and then he told Spec, and maybe somebody else. There's a site that tracks who has met with the Chiefs under any regard and then categorizes it based on where they met, in the bathroom, at the house, at the combine.
They have it over a meeting over dinner, lunch, or breakfast.
It said they had eggs, whatever it was. It went like in detail of every single thing about every meeting. And I can get in there and be like, all right, you know, like my thought is like, oh, get in there and break it down. Tell me how many defensive linemen linebackers, cornerbacks, wide receivers, and running backs they met, and then let's talk. But then just like how they met, I don't care.
Sure, that's not Binkley's website, his own site. You sure he doesn't compile this on his own?
Aggregate site?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if that's actually Bink's website, as a matter of fact. But we did ask JJ about, you know, the change developmentally within the organization when it comes to hitting. We've talked about the article that was out from Lynn Worthy even as well.
And there's one from Alec Lewis last season too, by the way.
And it's been talked about a lot. Even you heard from JJ Bacolo mentioning, he's like, a lot's been made about this, but essentially saying, you know, it's more just about, it sounds like more even educating kind of about, you know, everybody hears the term launch angle and everything, but some stuff gets overblown, but like it's still overall the same swing.
He still said what I wanted to hear, which was for years, it was square pegging a round hole. It was like, swing like this, do it this way, hit our way, that's the way that works. And now they're like, well, you know, maybe people swing different. You're like, yeah, they do. So great. Like, that is really good news for, you know, for them, obviously, that they're starting to make those shifts. And I like the way he talks about some of the other players. Like, clearly, I think he's one of those names because he's never, like, put up huge, huge numbers at the minor league level. People have wondered just and haven't mentioned him as much because the pitchers started coming around. But as a reminder, Kalia is only 21 years old. He's been playing more than a full year younger than every single one of his contemporaries. Brady Singer is 23, about to be 24 by the time Kalia will be 22. He's two full years younger, and Kalia is likely to start this season at the AAA level. Hit .264 with a .363 on base percentage. If he just finds some way to add power, and by power, I mean gap power. I mean, J.J. Pocola is still talking about him being a middle-of-the-order bat. So that's a really good sign for Kansas City. And interesting to just, you know, see where they are in the system, because I think we do feel pretty good about it. Even if, like he said, it's flipped. Like, we're just as deep. We just have more pitchers this time than we have hitters. It's like, damn, try to get both at the same time, then we'd really be cooking.
Thanks to J.J. Pocola for joining us here on Cody and Gold. In 12 minutes, we get to our Chiefs Red Half Hour. Again, the news in the last hour or so that Chris Jones expected to be franchise tagged by the Kansas City Chiefs, and now you'll start thinking whether or not a long-term deal can be done. Not a whole lot has changed from this. This is kind of the first step, but we'll continue to react to that, continue to get your reaction as well over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line, 69306. But with baseball season, especially in the minors, but obviously in the major leagues as well, there is never a shortage of great promotions. I still have the jersey from, I guess it would have been like 2003 3, the Billy Butler jersey promotion. That thing has lasted through multiple washes, multiple dryers, different states, different cities.
You still rocking a Billy Butler jersey?
I haven't worn it, but it's in the closet and it's in great shape.
Just fantastic.
Great shape.
Collector's item.
It is a promotional jersey. You would think over time that thing would turn to, you know, and it would wear down. It's in great shape.
Wear it.
I'll wear it tomorrow if you want. That's fine.
Please do.
Okay. Yeah, I have it.
I don't have a problem with Billy Butler.
Come on. I like Country Breakfast. I just told you he's a top 10 hitter in Royals history.
But it's the promotional one. It has like the FSKC logo on the back. Oh, yeah.
Sounds dope.
So that was one of my favorite, besides the obvious donut promotion that the Royals did way back in the day. The dozen hits. Great. All those nights going to Rose games and you go back and get your donuts. So the best team promotions in Major League Baseball, someone has spent a ton of time on this, compiled it. Do you know what the one for the Royals is by chance? Do you have a favorite?
I mean, I don't know every single promotion this year.
I figured
year,
you memorized the promotion calendar already.
Not done that
last
yet.
Last year, did you do that?
Bobbleheads are always a popular fit, so I'm a fan of that. I thought your favorite promotion was the Rabbi Bobblehead.
Yeah. The
for Seder night. What was it? No, it wasn't that.
Minch on a bench.
Minch on a bench. Okay, sorry. Was it for a particular Jewish appreciation night? Is that what it was?
You have to buy a themed ticket, so it's not one of those like first 10,000. But the one that MLB.com lists for the Royals is Jackie Robinson Monarchs t-shirt. So I guess it's May 17th, and you can get the, I don't know what the limit is on that, but Jackie Robinson Monarchs tee. They have that as the best promotion for the Royals giveaway-wise, I should say. Of course, there's other promotions, but promotional giveaway items.
Do you think anyone's going to do a trash can giveaway? Because that's the one I'm the most interested in.
I don't think majors are going to let them. I know for a fact there are two minor league baseball teams doing one. The team up in Staten Island is doing something geared toward that. And there's a team, can't remember which league it's in, is doing a, like, Oscar the Grouch, but, like, it's Orbit is the mascot for the Astros, so it's, like, they're a play on words there. Yeah. But
the White Sox are doing a Tim Anderson bat flip bobblehead. Does that come with a complimentary Brad Keller pitch to the ribs? Because then we're talking! Honestly, I don't have a favorite problem with bat flips. I'm pro bat flip, but I'm also, occasionally, I kind of like a guy getting one of the ribs.
My favorite one actually might be the Brewers. Apparently, they're giving out a Bob Uecker talking bobblehead. That sounds fantastic.
It's not going to beat the Rusty Kuntz talking bobblehead that I still own, so it really can only go so far.
You need to bring that in. I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. Says player, the whole deal. Look, it finishes the job. That's all we know. And we're waiting to see. I was just looking through the list. No, I'm pretty content with where it is. The only other one that even comes close is throughout the list, because most of these are bobbleheads or shirt giveaways, what you would expect throughout the season. And the Diamondbacks are giving away a Madison Bumgarner bobblehead, but it doesn't even say he's going to be on a horseback. So what's the point?
Well, it's the wrong name. It's not Mason Saunders or whatever.
They should absolutely give away a Mason Saunders bobblehead.
Mason Saunders bobblehead
night. I would purchase that. If that existed as a giveaway for the Diamondbacks, a Mason Saunders bobblehead in which he's like roping cattle. Is it cattle? Is that what he ropes? Dead serious, I kind of forgot.
A bull?
I don't think it's people.
Well, maybe it's like other horses.
I think it's a bull, right? I don't know.
Maybe it is people, Serta. You ever seen a circus clown?
They're not roping the clown, though.
No, I don't know.
They've roped clowns before.
I don't think they've ever roped a clown. I don't think part of the rodeo that they rope a clown, no.
69306.
The clown is supposed to distract.
Oh, you meant like a rodeo clown. I thought you meant like a birthday party clown. I was like,
the
what?
Rodeo clown. Like, a birthday party clown.
Like Bozo's just out there and they're trying to catch him?
Yeah, it sounds creepy.
Clown roping is a thing. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, you don't need clowns at kids' birthday parties trying to rope little kids?
It's a thing. Like, if you went to the rodeo, you're telling me I would see that? I don't think so.
You laugh now, but this is my backup career. Entertainer to the children.
You'd be a rodeo clown?
I'm going to be not a rodeo clown, a birthday clown.
Make more money as a rodeo clown.
I know, but it's far more dangerous. I can't possibly get into that line of work at this
with
stage
your
of my life.
Your agility that we saw on display at the 610 combine today.
Off the nose.
I feel like you might actually be quick. You have impressed me thoroughly at the combine.
You only saw me do one thing. Yeah. How can I impress you doing one thing?
Because we heard round of applause. I don't know if Serta heard it. When Serta and I were doing our events today, because none of us know who did what, there was no reaction. Whenever you were doing, they were encouraging you and they were applauding you.
This can't be right. Did you feel this way?
There was noise coming from that direction. And like, oh, there you go. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this means Cody's doing good.
I don't think that happened.
Oh, I heard it. Absolutely heard it.
And they gave me a couple, like, good jobs. Like,
That's what I'm talking about. I didn't get any.
There was no applause. They were not impressed with anything that I was doing.
No applause for you.
I got a couple of claps.
Cody got some claps, but you even got a good job. I got nothing. They're like, oh, God, this guy is terrible.
God, you were just tanking down the ranking system. I feel bad.
I warned you guys.
I'm currently
predicting our listeners
to finish.
I think I'm finishing last or second to last now overall. I think it's Sean Levy and I are going to be coming up the rear on the standings.
I got you fourth to last still. You're all right. Things are okay. I still got you fourth to last. Don't sweat it.
Inspector tweeted that we had to wait to see what Sean did, so it might have been worse.
What's that? So Speck is saying that despite me falling at the end
of
my 40.
Well, I don't think that it was the flip side and all of a sudden you got to wait to see what Sean did. It turns out he ran a 4.6. I don't think it's the other way. Like, those are the only two choices when you say that. Either he just stunned with his athleticism or it was a fail.
The text line says, when the expectations are that low for you, Cody, then people can be impressed.
And
it's true. I was picked as the third to worst favorite per Spectre.
I genuinely might have the slowest 40 time. I did not feel quick
on this show.
I felt slow while I was running.
Oh, I didn't feel good. I fell at the end of mine. I mean, I got across the finish line. Serta might have got the worst 40 time of the show. I think Cody actually, surprisingly, just maybe our listeners, I think you got a better 40 time than I did.
To mean?
Well, because you were telling me that I was going to be so much faster than you.
That felt like a shot. Surprisingly to everybody, Cody ran kind of fast. That's fair.
Nobody probably surprised, though, with the news today that Chris Jones expected to be franchise tagged by the Chiefs as they work toward a long-term deal. We'll get into that some more as our Chiefs Red Half Hour starts next.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold. Reminder, coming up 1 hour from now, Therese Paylor, Yahoo Sports, going to join us from Indianapolis. Get his feeling on the news of the day, which is where we start here in our Chiefs Red Half Hour. Nothing but Chiefs for the next 30 minutes. Chris Jones expected to be franchise tag, according to Ian Rappaport. And not really a surprise, but the Chiefs trying to work on a long-term deal perhaps here on both sides. The franchise tag window did not officially open until today, so happening very, very quickly. The deadline to do that would have been March the 12th. The new league year starts March the 18th. Of course, the draft is at the end of April in Las Vegas. And then the next deadline after that is July the 15th, or like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or so, would be the deadline to actually work out that long-term deal. And so where we're at with things, I mean, this shouldn't be alarming to anybody, or I don't think you should be
surprised.
You shouldn't be overjoyed. I don't think much has changed here with this. It's just the next step going forward. All right, you franchise tag him, continue to talk about long-term deal. At some point in time, either you get the long-term deal done, or you get the sense from your conversations that, okay, our number, their number, we are way too far apart. You potentially would trade him, or you get the sense, how would he view it if you kept him just on the franchise tag next season? What does that do to his mindset?
The one sticky part of this situation is the new league year, as you had previously mentioned, will start in a few weeks, and that's the amount of time you have to work out a long-term deal in this window. We know there's a second window, but when the new league year starts, that's when you have to start being like cap mindful. Currently, the Chiefs are projected right now over the cap. So they'd have to do something by then. Sort of correct me if I'm wrong, but they would have to be making some sort of move before March 12th in order to be in line with what they would need to do. Not saying some of those deals don't just happen naturally, but like before the draft happens, all that stuff happens. They got to find a way to like cut money now.
They have to create, they have to be under the cap before the new league year, which is March 18th.
They have that amount of time to get a deal done with Chris Jones or to cut somebody else.
Well, they can just have him franchise tag. There's a different deadline for having like long-term contracts set into place. I don't know what that is off the top of my head, but I could figure it out
July.
Pretty quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, they just have to figure out a way to get under the cap, which they will be because, I mean, Sammy Watkins is gone, barring a significant restructure.
But that tells us that they're going to have to restructure that in the next 2.5 weeks.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think no matter what would have happened here with Chris Jones, because of the league year and because you're trying to move on in the free agency period, I would expect, even before this Chris Jones stuff happened, I would expect we'd have some resolution on Sammy Watkins within the next 2 or 3 weeks anyway. I think that always had to happen. So you knew as an organization what your plan was also just going forward across the board. So I think the Sammy Watkins news, yes, they need to have that decide, but I think that was already something by the 18th that we'll probably have a resolution on for the most part.
Let me ask you something about these two guys, because the conversations we can have about them versus which way they go moving forward. There's a couple of ways that we've talked about these deals a few times, and I'm wondering if maybe there's just, would we consider an alternate outcome is all I'm pointing at. When we talk about Chris Jones and a long-term deal, what do we say, 4 years? Maybe five gets mentioned, $17 to $20 million a season gets mentioned. The way, if you want to extend this to outrun the cap, like some teams do, to try to outrun the cap as long as you can, like some teams do, is to go more years. So with Sammy Watkins, there's reports that he might be willing to just take a one-year deal because at a lower figure, simply based on the fact that this is, as we've already mentioned, a really horrible year to be a free agent wide receiver because the draft has a million players and there's a lot of available wide receivers. And if you're Sammy Watkins, where are you going to do better than to be in Kansas City for one more year, chance at another Super Bowl, chance to play with Patrick Mahomes, and then try to go hit the market next season? But with Chris Jones, one of the ways they could actually save money now could cost them later, and you take a bigger risk because you're going to be in this contract a full year younger. Is anybody willing to go like 6 years on Jones or more? Now, not more probably, but
no.
If you're talking about like 6 years instead, because if you do a 5 year deal with Jones, you know, it's pretty much a 3 year deal and the fourth and fifth, you might eat some dead money, but you can get out of it. If you do a 6 year deal, you're talking about 4 years dead set. No way out of it, Chris Jones.
And by the way, he turns 26 in July, if you're just wondering his age, just to keep
in
mind.
I might go 6 years.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of it. Anybody other than Patrick Mahomes, which I don't think that'll be 6 years either. I don't like anybody going past 6 years or to the 6 year mark. That just scares me.
Into year 32 is a pretty risky time to be getting into somebody. But like I told you, the way these deals work is really becomes a 4 year deal. And do you think at that position he can stay healthy enough to actually do a deal? Would you go the extra year, sort of? I mean, it's a way to save money is the way I'm pointing, because you can push money down.
I mean, yeah, I don't think that that's realistic, and I don't know that his team would want
that. Yeah, if you're Chris Jones, do you want to even explore that?
Because, I mean, yeah.
Another contract at 30?
Having some type of security long-term like that is probably preferable to a player, but when you know that that's not actually going to matter, and you... Some point, I mean, I'm sure he would like to actually test the market to see what's out there if he reaches that point in his career. Right now, I don't think that the Chiefs should allow that. But
in the NFL,
he's going to want to do it.
In the NFL, you buy yourself an extra year of security. Like I said, if you sign a 5 year deal, it's a 3 year deal. You sign a 6 year deal, it's a 4 year deal. You buy an extra year of guaranteed dollars in your pocket. That's the number that matters to players anyway. Guaranteed dollars. The guaranteed dollar, because if it's, let's say it's 4 for 72 was the estimate put out there by Pro Football Focus. So let's just say it's that, or 4 for 80, right? They're doing a bit team friendly. If it's 6 for 120, and let's say that 4 for 80, what he really wanted out of that was the guaranteed dollars that were over 50 million, right? 52 and a half is what it was. 60 million is what he actually wants in guarantees. He takes the 6 year, he gets over $60 million in guarantees because the Chiefs will be on the hook for the extra season. It is spread out, but it is guaranteed money in a sport that you can't be guaranteed to play 6 more years, 4 more years, 3 more years, 2 more years. It's a risk for the team, too, and it might be taking extra value out of his pocket if he stays healthy. But in the NFL, sometimes guaranteed dollars, other than quarterback. Quarterbacks should never take long-term deals. They should never take like a 10-year deal with quarterback, because that's just stupid.
For reference, though, just to put in perspective for people, so Aaron Donald was a 6-year deal, okay? It was a 6-year deal signed in 2018, so he would have been, 26 at the time, right around kind of the same time frame,
same
of course,
age
as what you're talking about with Chris Jones here. He's not a free agent until 2025, is Aaron Donald. He had a $135 million deal. Of that, $86.8 million
was
guaranteed.
Yeah, but he's not getting that, and he shouldn't.
No, as far as guarantees, though, I'm saying $86.8 is guaranteed in the deal for Aaron Donald. Right. I'm not saying the financial. What I'm getting at is the length of 6 years. How many of the guys recently that have signed, especially at that position, six year deals? DeMarcus Lawrence was a 5 year deal. Frank Clark was a 5 year deal. Fletcher Cox was a 6 year deal. Grady Jarrett signed a 4 year deal. I would be very, very surprised if either side would be willing to go to six. I think you can make a case on both ends, both for the Chiefs and for there's serious risk involved on both parties for that. The franchise tag number we do know, right? The franchise tag number is projected to be about $16.2 million. So as things stand, if they officially put the franchise tag on Chris Jones, that's the kind of number you're dealing with here for 2020.
I think there's, as much as you can say, yeah, there's reasons to knock it down on both sides. There are. You're like, what? 6 year contract at a defensive line position where like back problems flare up in 2.5 seconds? No, thank you. And we have to give more guaranteed money? No, thank you. There's positive on both sides too. Guaranteed money, like I said, for Chris Jones. And more time to finagle cap numbers for Chris Jones down forward. And one thing I would, you know, we always mention Aaron Donald when we talk about his contract. I want to be pretty clear. Like, I think Chris Jones is a phenomenal player. I think he's one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL. He is not Aaron Donald. Like, Aaron Donald is a player of a, like, if we're tiering out, remember, you tier quarterbacks and those things are floating around the internet for a while, and it would be great tier one, tier two, like Patrick Mahomes is tier one and then everybody else is tier two, like all the other great or whatever, however you want to set it up. If we're rating defensive linemen, Aaron Donald is tier one by himself, separate universe. Chris Jones is tier two with the other great defensive tackles. For me, I don't want to speak for you. I don't want to speak for Serta, but when you're talking about guaranteed dollars, if you add that 6 year, I don't think that means you have to go to $80 million guaranteed for Chris Jones. I think it means instead of $52.5 million, which is what Pro Football Focus had projected, maybe it's $62.5 million. It doesn't triple up, but he hits that guaranteed number that his team wants. You risk being under contract for another year in Kansas City, but if you actually hit everything, if you actually stay under contract, stay healthy, and stay with the team, it's not a bad thing. Because you talk about hitting the market, there's real value in the NFL if you actually play out a contract. That's why people don't often play them out, because, you know, you're not at risk of, like, you're still likely to be a free agent in four instead of three. That's the question. Do you want to be a free agent at 29 or 30? And for him, I could see why he'd want to be a free agent at 29.
We had a few people over on the Smitty's Garage Burger and Beer text line 69306 mentioning, okay, well, the fact that they're planning on franchise tagging him and it sounds like it's happening already and they were supposed to meet with Chris Jones' representatives today in Indianapolis. In fact, this must mean the meeting went terribly. It doesn't mean anything. The meeting could have gone great and they could have said, hey, we're going to go ahead and put this franchise tag on you. We're going to continue to work with you and work on this long-term deal. Like that's expected. Now, if you remember, though, I just want to play this again. This was Brett Veach, I guess, 2 days ago. 2 days ago, Brett Veach, what he had to say about how their conversations leading up to today's expected meeting were going with Chris Jones.
I think it's meaningful. Listen, all dialogue is good dialogue, and I think just being up front where we are as an organization and, you know, what our expectations are in regards to what Chris and his camp, what their expectations are, you know, the last thing you want is for something to go awry because there just wasn't enough communication. So you can't have enough dialogue, and like I said, they've been very open and honest with us, and we feel we've been have handled this situation in a very similar fashion. So again, we're looking forward to sitting down with his agents this week and continuing to pick up on the dialogue and where it left off.
That's where things were just a few days ago as far as how Brett Veach categorized their current conversations with Chris Jones and his reps.
Well, they were said to be meeting today, and I don't think that means, I think you see, they were meeting today, franchise tag. No, today was just the first available day they were going to do it.
Literally, today was the first day possible.
They knew they were going to need time to negotiate a long-term deal or have more time to work out trade scenarios. And you know what you need to work out trade scenarios or work out long-term deals? Knows what the number you're currently working at. And now you know the number that you're currently working at. That assists you in a huge way.
Again, we'll get to Rez Paylor's perspective on this coming up at 12:30 here on Cody and Gold. We continue our Chiefs Red half hour. And when it came to the Super Bowl run the Chiefs went on, the injury news and the injuries that happened along the way, of course, week 17 was Juan Thornhill. And the best news to come out of that so far has been, it looks like they're expecting, I think it was James Palmer who had that report initially, that they're expecting Juan Thornhill to be ready to go by the start of the regular season. We don't know how quickly in a training camp, if really at all, preseason, does he even play, that kind of stuff. But that's a huge positive. And I don't know how effective Juan Thornhill's going to be here in his first year back, but you have to feel way better about it now. I thought it was something maybe a month into the season, Cody, before we would even seen Juan Thornhill in 2020. Now they're thinking maybe it's week one. Doesn't mean that, hey, they see him out there, they want to be very cautious about his status and everything, and it's past week one, past week two before we see him. But that's a huge boost, because I didn't think Juan Thornhill would even be much of a factor the first month, first quarter of the season.
There's two major injuries now that I feel much better about Kansas City this season about. Thornhill's one. Because not only did they say he's going to be ready for week one, they said that the damage wasn't as bad as they thought. And there are very few things that I can actually compare my personal life situations to that of an NFL player. But I have had knee surgery in which it was worse than they thought. And that's not good. And I've had knee surgery where it was about what they thought, and the timeline fit, and everything kind of. I've had multiple knee surgeries, in case you're curious.
Man, I'm gonna I think I got a slower 40 time than Cody, and now I'm finding I had multiple
I've had
knee surgeries. This
three.
I'm feeling even worse about
I've
my 40 today.
Three knee surgeries, and is four, and I'm 40 pounds overweight. So if you lost to me in the 40, that's really sad for you.
I think I did. This
I'm like 40 pounds overweight and three knee surgeries in.
Two busted knees.
Yeah, it's not great. Oh yeah, both bad. They both had surgery. It's not surgery on one knee. I've had surgery on both. But when you were looking,
see, you're bionic now. I feel like, see, that the clear advantage.
I don't have like pins in there.
I don't know what you got in there.
I just scoped it. Okay. Just clean me up.
Okay.
But so the Thornhill injury, they made it sound like the things were better than they expected. That's why the healing process is going to be quicker, which means as much as me, you, and Serta all had the conversation about that we didn't think he could really be counted on as being a factor next season, I'm actually starting to lean that way. I'm actually starting to think he can be an actual contributor on the field. Maybe not the 1,000% version of Juan Thornhill, but he's smarter. He'll know where to go. He'll be more adjusted in the system. He might be as valuable as a player as he was to them as his rookie year coming up in the sophomore. Maybe it won't take the huge leap you want players to take, but is valuable. And then you couple that with the fact that they said yesterday that it kind of sounded like Mahomes is probably not going to need surgery in his knee. That's another guy that's not going to have to recover, that gets to work all offseason with new wide receivers or whatever new wide receivers come in, or current wide receivers or current tight ends to be comfortable. It seems like they got a lot of really good news in the injury front the last 2 days, and I'm starting to feel more optimistic that those aren't two things we're going to have to talk about really much, if at all, next season.
Here's what James Palmer had to say about the idea that it looks like maybe no offseason surgery, as you mentioned, for Mahomes.
So they did a physical on Patrick Mahomes, I'm told, after the season ended. We all know about the week 7 dislocated kneecap that occurred. Now, after that physical, I'm told he doesn't need any surgery this offseason. That was something that a lot of people around the league were wondering if that was going to be in play when the season was over. He does not need surgery, I'm told. Actually, his genetic makeup plays a part in this as well. I was told because he is knock-kneed in a manner, and the way his body is constructed, it actually played very well to the dislocated kneecap in allowing him to be flexible enough for that to happen and bounce back. He is back working out. We saw him throwing passes to Dez Bryant. Andy Reid joked about that today. He is back trying to go back to the Super Bowl as he wants to in this next season, and it looks like he has a healthy offseason to go about that business. The knee being healthy is a big point and a big emphasis for Patrick Mahomes, as he's also trying to get a record-setting contract.
He's just different than everybody else. I mean,
not me. I needed those surgeries every time.
Knock knee, that actually might be helping him, and I have zero concern about it. I really don't. I don't have any concern. If they're saying that no offseason surgery is needed, no offseason surgery is needed, I have no concern about that. Definitely more concern on the Juan Thornhill route, because that was actually a torn ACL, and you do wonder how long it takes. He'll get back to it, but that might be a situation with Thornhill where it's middle of the season before you really start to see him feel even more comfortable. You always hear guys talking about you know trusting your body again and things like that.
If at any point next season he's 100% right back to where he was, that's a giant boost for another Super Bowl run. And that, you know, that was something Andy Reid was talking about, obviously, on SiriusXM, because that's what you talk about when you're trying to win Super Bowls is, I won one Super Bowl, how do I win another Super Bowl, which is a more than reasonable conversation to be having. And when Andy was, you know, just generally speaking about that, I mean, you have to, you know, he went back and said that the defense was the reason why they got there. Golden, truthfully, yeah, I mean, it's part of the reason, but you know the reason they got to the Super Bowl? You know the reason they won the Super Bowl? Patrick Mahomes. They've had plenty of good defenses over the years. Yes, that helps, but he damn near drugged them to the Super Bowl with a defense that was absolutely garbage the year before. So as much as Andy wants to give the boost, the Super Bowl might be the reason, the put them over the top reason they won the Super Bowl. But the reason they actually won it is Patrick Mahomes. They need one Thornhill, but the real truth in all of this is a quarterback.
And they don't win the Super Bowl without Mahomes, of course. But what he was saying is the retooled defense, specifically the quote, you know, Andy Reid was missing with Matthew, Frank Clark, and also even mentioned the Suggs addition that came late out in the season and, you know, essentially home runs that was, and to bring him in as well. He really thinks that that was big. But yes, when it comes to the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl, I think everybody knows it started with Patrick Mahomes. But the year before, and you had Mahomes, of course, and you were in the AFC title game, and the thought was, hey, if you could just have that average defense the following year, then there's a very good chance of getting to a Super Bowl. What do? They go retool it, and they turn out to be on the back end of the season, one of the better defenses.
Defense was better. It helped them win the Super Bowl. The reason they won the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes. I will not hear any other answers to this.
I mean, the question was, a retooled defense is what took his team to that Super Bowl winning level.
And I do understand that. I really do. But actually, what took him to the Super Bowl winning level, again, was Patrick Mahomes. Before that, they were a team who went to the playoffs that didn't have a hope to get there. Then Patrick Mahomes showed up and they became a Super Bowl team.
All right, we'll get to last minute in just a little bit here as we continue our Chiefs Red Half Hour. Again, Therese Paylor going to join us at 12:30. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying about
it. I understand
it.
The defense is good. I'm just telling you that nothing else matters if you don't have Patrick Mahomes. Retool defense with Alex Smith wasn't solving the problem.
But if they didn't have a retool defense last year, this past year, I don't think they won the Super Bowl, no.
It was a weaker year. They still win it. They had Patrick Mahomes. They still win it.
Last minute. Last minute.
Michael Giardi of NFL Network, I don't know him, but he's he's reporting that the Giants have been named by sources at the NFL Scouting Combine as a potential team of interest in Tom Brady, along with the Titans and Raiders, who interest has been discussed. I guess Dave Gettleman just wants to ruin the mentality of the young quarterback that he drafted with the number 6 overall pick last season.
Boy, he's really going to get Rosen the hell out of the league? This is what happened with Rosen, right?
Very next year, who are the Giants trading Daniel Jones to? Who are they trading Daniel Jones to?
I mean, Daniel Jones wasn't that bad.
He was all right.
He had some really productive games.
If they went the Brady, I mean, Brady in New York, my goodness, it makes more sense than as far as from a just personality standpoint than Brady in Tennessee, even though Tennessee's a better team. I'm not saying from fit, but I'm talking about just personality-wise, Brady with the Titans versus Brady in Vegas or Brady in New York. Like, if you're the NFL and if you buy into that kind of stuff, that makes way more sense. But if you are the Giants, you just drafted Daniel Jones a year ago, and you're going to go sign Tom Brady, who is continuing to go down the wrong end of your career. Makes no sense, but it's something the Giants would do, isn't it?
This can't be real. They can't really be interested, right?
Have you heard Dave Gettleman speak?
I have.
I mean,
he didn't commit to Daniel Jones.
Absolutely, be real. And also, if they're gonna do that, just do what the Cardinals did. You've got a high draft pick this year too. If you hate Daniel Jones so much, take Tua.
I don't think they pick high enough for Tua. Maybe Justin Herbert. Whoever, just take someone.
All this talk about where Brady's going to go, and especially today, stuff leaking out that he's not going to be maybe back in New England. That's coming from Brady. That's not coming from the Patriots. Like, this information, as far as the stuff leaking out, I'm not saying I still think he ends up in New England, because I think some of this is being intentionally put out there by Tom Brady's people to get the Patriots to commit to him with guaranteed money over the next 2 years. That's what he wants. He wants guaranteed money over the next 2 seasons. So we'll talk more about that during What's Trending, because that's coming up next here on Cody and Gold. We'll get to What's Trending and the latest on the CBA, plus Therese Paylor in the noon hour.
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.